You are listening to Dove Valley Deep Divers with Eric Trickle
and Lance Sanderson.
Ball comes out of the hands of Newton. It's on the ground, picked up by T.J. Ward at the four-yard line. Vaughn Miller did it again.
On Overtime Media.
And it looks like we are live. We're going to give Bawana Beast behind the scenes just a second to get our Facebook group in the stream. Looks like we have green check marks all the way across the board. Mile high. Hello, everybody in Broncos country, and welcome into episode 100 of the Dove Valley Deep Divers podcast. I'm your host, Lance Sanderson, and joining me as per usual is my good friend and colleague. He is Mile High Huddle's senior NFL draft analyst, the one and only Eric Trickle. Eric, man, 100 episodes. 100 episodes. It's been a long ride. I'm not sure how I managed to put up with all of your nonsense over the past, 100 episodes of this show. But how we doing, man? I'm excited to be here with you. What's going on?
Well, for you, it's more like past 90 because you missed quite a few.
Oh, hush.
Because I've been here for every single one, but yeah, you've missed some. So it's 100 episodes of the Dove Valley Deep Divers for Eric Trickle, anyways. Lance Anderson, you still got a little bit. But I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here tonight. I mean, it was not the best week at work, but super excited to be here, super excited to be celebrating this milestone that at one point didn't think it would happen, but glad we're here, glad we're able to bring some enjoyment to some people out there in the world for a little bit, people from all over the world as well. I know we have people from Turkey, we have people from London, including James Campbell, who's in the chat right now, people from New York, Kansas, other people from Alaska, and then we have Wyoming represented by the one resident, Lance Anderson. But, I mean, it's amazing that we've managed to get this far and everything. And we've got a lot of fun stuff planned for you guys tonight, and so hopefully you guys will join us for it. And I just got to say thanks for the congratulations from all of you guys. And, David, I'm never wrong.
No, you're never wrong. Just sometimes mistaken every now and again. No, it's really fun, guys. I think that quite honestly, this endeavor, when we first got started, it was kind of a hit and miss endeavor between me and Eric. We talked a lot over the course of the summer and 2019 about trying to get another podcast going that we wanted to put him and me together. We've been talking back and forth, and at first I was kind of hesitant about it. I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I was really hesitant about it because Eric, I mean, I hold the highest regard for him as an analyst, and especially as a draft analyst and everything like that. I didn't necessarily know that I could hold a conversation with him, but as we've done this over the last almost 2 years now, I mean, we started in August of 2019, and over the last 2 years, Eric's become one of my best friends. We've put a lot of great content out there. Eric's actually going to be in my wedding next year, next May. Actually, just under a year ago now. So, but yeah, I mean, to be able to grow and learn as an analyst with Eric has been one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And not only as an analyst, but as a person. I mean, I think I've become a little bit more diligent in the way that I go about doing my work behind the scenes and studying the game and trying to just be able to keep up with the work that Eric does, which is, I mean, round the clock, Eric's always doing stuff. So to have him reach out to me and say, hey, I respect your takes, I respect your opinions, and I want you to come and start this project with me, this show, that really means a lot to me. And it meant a lot to me then, and even now, we're 100 episodes into it, and I can't thank you enough, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long road getting all set up and going. I remember in 2018, 2017, I can't remember the year, I had the Trickle Zone. It was just my own podcast. It was just me getting sitting there, or the Trickle Down Theories, not Trickle Zone. Trickle Zone's on Saturdays. It's my current show. Some personal things happened, and I had to cancel that. I had to cut it short and everything, and I had to take some time away. And I remember reaching out to Chad about it, and Chad's like, "Well, we have this guy," and it was just right before you first came in, and he sent me an article of Lance's and told me to check it out, and basically, I held Lance's fate in my hand. If I said no, Lance wasn't joining the team, basically. So I read his work. I liked what he saw. Chad kind of told me, hey, take him underneath your wing a little bit. Try and help him grow as a guy to help you out with the draft stuff and everything. So I reached out to him, wanted to do – it was like in April or May,
yep.
Or March or April, I mean, about starting a podcast. But it was going to be after the draft. And then there was some issues on his end, had to get a mic, had to get a computer, all that stuff like that. And we're like, all right. Let's shoot for just before the start of the season. And it was just before that season. I think it was the It was the Friday before the start of the season, and our first episode was a 53-man roster projection, a recorded one. And then we were doing that for the fall throughout the season, and then Chad reached out to us about going live and doing what we do now for it. And, man, it's been a long time. I mean, we've been doing the live show for almost a year and a half now, and almost 2 years now for just doing the podcast. It's been a long road, and, man, I got to say, it's been a wonderful ride for you, and here's to 100 more.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I can't wait to just continue on this role. And, I mean, over the summer, it's going to be a little difficult. The way that we like to do stuff here at the Dove Valley Deep Divers is we do deep dive analysis on the Denver Broncos. We get some news every now and again, try to break down the news for you guys. But really, we bring you hard-hitting analysis on a different level. You know, we don't necessarily like to just stay in the news and bring you the latest news and updates and stuff like that. We want to tell you why. We want to teach you more about the football aspect of it. And that's really, we've kind of gotten away from that over the last, probably about a month and a half or so. I mean, not outside of the draft stuff and doing everything that we do with that. But tonight we're going to kind of get back to that just a little bit. We're going to break down this Broncos defense and how good they can do. But before we get into that, another just quick little story before we get going here is the name of this show was so if you guys know anything about me and Eric, we are big Pokemon fans and we love to play Pokemon Go together. Eric will invite me to raids and we play all the time. It hasn't happened here in a while. We need to get back to that because I was really enjoying that and getting my son into Pokemon Go and stuff like that. He'd really love to go catch some legendaries and everything like that. But Eric, when we were first coming up with the name for the podcast, was saying, I want it to be I Choose You Broncos. That was the name of the podcast. And Chad shot that down almost immediately.
He shot that down so quick.
So we're racking our brains and we're trying to figure out something. And it was actually me. I'm sitting down just kind of reading through an article and it said something about Dove Valley. I'm like, well, we want to do like deep information and dive deep. That's what we do at Mile High Huddle. So I was like, wait, it's just perfect. It has some alliteration to it. Dove Valley Deep Divers. I sent that out to Eric and he's like, I like that a lot. And then I sent it to Chad and he said, that's actually the best name that you guys have sent me. We sent him like five or six other names. I can't remember what all they were, but he's like, Dove Valley Deep Divers. That's the name of your guys' show. And we kind of took on that mantra. And I remember at the very beginning of the first show, Eric and I had this really cool little intro that we had planned and it got erased as well. Do you remember that? So Eric, go ahead and start us off.
So for trickle-down theories, I always start out the show with good morning, good evening, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is kind of how I introduce the trickle zone a little bit. And we did that in there, and I was like, oops, oh, wait, that's not what we're doing. Like, kind of like we made a mistake and everything. And Lance edited the episode. He sent it in to Chad, and then Chad edited it out. And I was super bummed when I heard it that it got edited out. But thought it would have been pretty funny to throw that in there, just kind of the little throwback and then kicking off the new show that way, but it is what it is. I understand why he edited it out, but still would have been freaking hilarious.
It really was. Like, quite honestly, I was like, he's in the middle of doing this. Like, welcome to the trickle down theory. I was like, Eric, wait, dude, that's the wrong intro, man. Like, we're not doing that. We're not doing that anymore. This is completely new. Anyways, guys, it's been a lot of fun, and the chat's rolling deep right now. There's a lot of congratulations. Michael Ronquillo, let's say hello to everybody that's joining us here for episode 100. Michael Ronquillo just donated some stars on Facebook. Congratulations, Lance and Eric, on your 100th episode of the Dove Valley Deep Divers. Go Broncos and orange and blue colors of the Denver Broncos. Hashtag Denver Broncos for life and hashtag state of being from Arizona. We've got obviously James Campbell in the group here as well. Garrett Ringy joining in on Facebook. Good evening, Broncos and Mile High Huddle. Let's see here. I've got Clee Torres. He says, I can see Kansas City signing Richard Sherman since they lost Rashad Breland. I mean, that would make a little bit of sense. Tommy Brohanna jumping in on Twitch. Got to show some love to our Twitch supporters here. Happy 100 episodes, guys. Glad I've been able to watch a lot of it and looking forward to all of your future shows. Well, Tommy, we appreciate you, man. Thank you for that. Aaron Medina here as well. Congratulations on 100. Dave Glassman, hashtag the 100th episode. Guys, you guys really don't understand. If it's not for all of you guys joining us, we can't do this. It's because of you guys that we do this. We break down the Broncos because you guys come in and check it out. And if it weren't for you guys, we really couldn't be on this show and come to you guys every single Friday at 6 o'clock. So Muhammad jumping in here with a $5 super chat. Happy 100th anniversary, fellas. Mo, dude, the king of the super sticker. We really appreciate you. Once again, guys, Welcome into episode 100 of the Dove Valley Deep Divers podcast. We love and appreciate all of your guys' support. Now, to get into the crux of our show and get back to our Dove Valley Deep Divers roots, we had this question that's been, it's been coming up a lot, especially on Twitter. It's like, how good can this Broncos defense be now that George Payton has completely retooled it? Vic Fangio going into year three in this scheme. He's got a bunch of really high-quality players. You've got Justin Simmons and Kareem Jackson coming back here. Kathleen, thank you once again for the congratulations. We appreciate you. You've got Kyle Fuller jumping in here who had a huge season. Bryce Callahan, potentially Ronald Darby as well. Pat Surtain, the first-round pick out of Alabama. I mean, this defense is loaded. Just how good can this defense be? You know, Eric, I want your opinion before we go and do the deep dive on this. How good do you think this Broncos defense can actually be?
Well, first of all, I want to say is I don't think the defense was as bad last year as a lot of other people do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were able to do extremely well. They only allowed 333 total first downs. That's the 22nd most. They blitzed on 27.9% of the plays. They got a hurry percentage of 11.5, which was third most. And then, I mean, they missed 94 total tackles, eighth fewest. They had a 26.2 pressure percentage, which was seventh in the NFL. And passing, this is the biggest one. This was the biggest shock for me anyways when I was looking these up. They were ninth in expected points added on passing plays, which that's actually extremely good. I mean, for on defense, if you're in the positive, it means that your defense is adding you points, basically. They were ninth. Like, that's extremely good, especially with how the season ended, with all the injuries, with the suspension to A.J. Boye, with everything that was going on in the secondary. Being ninth in that stat for passing defense is absolutely insane to me. And then in third down percentage, they were 15th, which isn't great, but hey, you're still in the top half. They only allowed 40.2% of third downs to be converted, which is, I mean, and then on fourth down, they allowed 7 of 14, which is 50%. They did extremely well. And then when teams got into the red zone, they were the best team at preventing them from getting scoring a touchdown. 47.5% of drives that landed in the red zone only ended in a touchdown. 47.5. No other team was below 50%. And the Kansas City Chiefs, ironically, were the worst. They allowed 76.6%. Like, this defense was actually good last year. They just dealt with so many injuries, and the inconsistencies on offense just held them back. I mean, the worst thing about it is they had the third worst starting position. Mm-hmm. Teams averaged starting on the 31.9-yard line against this defense. That sets them back already. So they did extremely well. Now, you talk about into who they added. This is a team that's getting Von Miller back. They added Patrick Surtain. They added Kyle Fuller. They added Ronald Darby. They should be getting Bryce Callahan back. Like, this is a team that should be pretty lights out on defense this year. I mean, top five isn't out of the realm of possibility. Even top three isn't. But a lot's going to fall back on how does the offense do. Can they be consistent, and can they give this defense breaks when needed?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Now, before we continue in on this, I forgot we have a very special announcement for you guys. So if you guys are financially able to do so, head on over to huddleuppod.com, and that's our merch tent. That's where you guys can get yourself a hat or a t-shirt or anything like that. John, I'm going to grab this really fast. But the Dove Valley Deep Divers, with episode 100 coming up, we decided that we were going to design a new t-shirt for you guys incorporating the hashtag state of being. Now, John, I'm going to let you kind of roll through this here really quick, but we've got this new t-shirt, the Dove Valley Deep Divers t-shirt, white with the blue and orange logo, and on the back, it's got the hashtag state of being in orange letters for you guys. Very special, very affordable for you guys. But tonight, to some of our Super Chat superstars, we are going to be giving away a handful of these this evening. So get your guys' Super Chats in. Any questions you guys want to ask or have it answered, let us know. Just hit us up. We appreciate every single one of you guys. But this new Dove Valley Deep Diver shirt, I wanted to get something a little bit slicker than this. I wanted to do a baseball tee that had some blue sleeves on it. But unfortunately, our website couldn't actually do that. But anyways, the new Dove Valley Deep Divers hashtag state of being t-shirt is up on huddleuppod.com right now. Get your guys' right now. And like I said, we'll give, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 of these away to any Super Chat superstars tonight. So, but to get back to our conversation at hand here, I went and did a deep dive on Vic Fangio's defenses going back in his entire time as a defensive coordinator and head coach, 21 total seasons, and went and picked the top three defenses that he has ever had, including the 2011 49ers, 2012 49ers, and the 2018 Chicago Bears. And these defenses, the reason why I highlighted these is because I think this Broncos defense can be on par with, if not even better than those teams. Now, to break down the 2011 49ers here, they were fourth in total yards allowed, second in points allowed, and first in takeaways. They were first across the board in the running game and in total yards, yards per attempt, and rushing touchdowns. They had 42 total sacks that year. And if you remember back, that 2011 season, that was when Alden Smith was a rookie coming out. He was, I think, the 9th or 10th or 11th overall pick or something like that. He had 14 total sacks in his rookie year. That was also the same year that Von Miller was a rookie. So, I mean, and Von Miller had 12 or 13 sacks, something like that as well. So, I mean, this kind of projection here is basing this on, you know, these top three defenses. They also had Justin Smith and Ahmad Brooks that had 7 total sacks apiece. They had 23 total interceptions with Carlos Rogers and Dante Whitner, who had 6 apiece, and then Terrell Brown had 4, and 20 total forced fumbles with 16 recovered. I mean, that's a very highly productive unit, and I think that this Broncos team can definitely get back on the par with that. Going back to that just a little bit, because Alden Smith also the next year had 19.5 sacks, led the league, I believe, that year. In sacks. So if with Von Miller coming back, Bradley Chubb on the other side, and then you got Shelby Harris and Draymond Jones in the middle, is 42, 50 sacks, something like that, is that a feasible number for this Broncos unit?
I definitely think it is. I mean, we're getting the development of Draymond Jones. We have Shelby Harris back, who's hopefully should be able to be healthy. We have two guys in Bradley Chubb and Malik Reed who should be able to get their pressures on their own, but having those guys on the interior, that's something that Von Miller hasn't really had consistently throughout his career, and now he has it. I mean, there's a reason why this defense is drawing a lot of comparisons to that Super Bowl winning defense that they had, because they have the interior pass rushers and the run defenders of Derek Wolfe and Malik Jackson. They have them replaced. They have DeMarcus Ware replaced. They have Von Miller still. I mean, but the Von Miller then is not going to be. Yeah. Anyways, they have the secondary. They have the pieces to be this great thing on defense. They just can't get tired out, and that's the biggest thing. And so I think that's perfect. That's very plausible. I think they have good depth, and they have a lot of versatility for them that are versatility on this defense that allow them to do different things to get pressure on these quarterbacks. And on that note, I mean, last year, without Von Miller, with these injuries on the defensive line, with the injuries in the secondary, they averaged the pressure 26% of the time. That's ridiculously high for everything that they dealt with. So is it plausible? Oh, yeah, that's extremely plausible. And I think that might be a little bit, not necessarily short-selling it, but the potential of this defense, I would say, could be even more greater than that. And I do want to grab something from Michaela real quick. She said, sorry, I'm late. Hey, Michaela, you arrived here exactly when you were meant to arrive.
Yeah, absolutely. We just appreciate you guys for joining. And she jumped in hot. Coming in here off the top rope with the $10 Super Chat. Happy 100th episode, guys. Michaela, we appreciate you. We really do. And thank you so much again for joining us. Mo actually jumping in here with a pretty, astute comment here. 3 sacks a game for 17 games, 51 sacks on the season. That's completely doable. I definitely agree with that. It's all going to depend on the health. I mean, that's something that the Broncos it's a big question mark right now. With Von Miller coming back, he had that ankle surgery from last year, missed all of last season. Bradley Chubb still coming back from that second torn ACL, I think it's his left knee. Had a decent season last year, but wasn't quite all the way up to par with the both of them. And, I mean, Malik Reed as well. Malik Reed is looking pretty good at OTAs from what I understand. So, and he's excited to play with Von Miller and Bradley Chubb on the field at the same time. I mean, this pass rush could be incredibly lethal. Now, going back to the interior of the defensive line here, Vic Fangio has always had at least one interior defensive line with 5, 6, 7 sacks. I mean, Justin Smith had it a couple times. He had Akeem Hicks in Chicago in 2018, had 6.5 sacks. Is 6.5 sacks for both Shelby Harris and Draymond Jones unfeasible?
I mean, No, it's not. And I wouldn't be surprised if Draymond Jones pushes double digits. I'm not sure he gets there, but I think he'll definitely push for it, especially with 17 games, with how he closed out last season. He ended up with, 3 sacks in the final 4 games or something like that?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
If he can carry that over, and, I mean, that's when he started to show his development as a pass rusher, or as an interior pass rusher, and we've said this before, 2.5, 3 years. That's how long it takes for interior defensive linemen to really break out. We started to see that from Draymond Jones. Can he carry that over? If he does, and he's able to play at this elite level, they're able to stay healthy on their defense, and the quarterbacks in the offense is able to help out the defense by moving the ball downfield, eating up clock, giving them rest, I can see him break in 10. And Shelby Harris, I think that 6.5 is very feasible for him.
Well, it's damn near been his average, quite honestly, going back for the last couple of seasons. I mean, he had 6 sacks in 2018, had 5.5 or 6 sacks, something like that, in 2019. And last year, he even in a shortened season, he had 3.5, 4 or something like that. I don't remember off the top of my head. But still, I mean, even in only playing 12 games, he still had the ability to get after the passer and still knock the football down, which is probably his biggest impact at the line of scrimmage, getting his hands up in the air, even though he doesn't win those pass rush reps like you want him to, and is really that true interior disruptor like an Aaron Donald or a Draymond Jones or a Chris Jones, anyone like that. He's still getting his hands on footballs at the line of scrimmage, so that's a big thing. It's a missed statistic that people don't necessarily think about. Like J.J. Watt, back when he was winning Defensive Player of the Year, he was getting 8, 9, 10. Shelby Harris has 8, 9, 10 almost every single season as well. So the front half of this Broncos defense is already well lined out. They've got depth. They've got great players up at the top side of it. They've got some good players behind him, and Alexander Johnson, Josie Jewell, maybe a little bit hit and miss, but still as a run defender, he's pretty decent. They went and bolstered that linebacker unit with Baron Browning. They're getting Justin Sternod back, who missed all of last season, who they brought in to be that coverage linebacker out of Wake Forest last year. So, I mean, this front half of the Broncos defense is going to be pretty stellar. Now, I want to pivot here and go back towards the back half of the defense, because something that is kind of a misnomer, and I was very shocked when I found this out about the Broncos or about Vic Fangio's defense. Everyone says that it's highly touted, and it is. It's a very difficult defense to go against, but it's very well known for creating a lot of turnovers. And I was shocked to find out just how not true that necessarily is. Now, Vic Fangio, as in 21 years as a defensive coordinator and a head coach, the head guy running the defense, has only had 7 total seasons in which his defense ranked in the top 10 in takeaways over the course of the season. He had 3 other seasons where he was 13th, 13th, and 14th, and then every other season after that is like 8 or 9 seasons it was in the 20s. Like, it was down at the bottom half of the league, including last season where the Broncos were one of the worst teams in the NFL. That's kind of a hard thing to think about, especially with the Broncos secondary the way it is. However, Justin Simmons had 5 interceptions last year. Bryce Callahan had a pair as well. But the big guy right now, Kyle Fuller, back in 2018 with the Chicago Bears, he had 7 interceptions, and Eddie Jackson, the free safety, stellar free safety, who I think Justin Simmons is actually better than, had 6 interceptions. Is this the year that the Broncos could turn around that lack of takeaways that they've had over the last couple of seasons and start getting their hands on some footballs and taking them the other way?
I definitely do, especially if the pass rush is able to go down there. And somebody in the chat actually hit the nail on the head about it, about the offense being able to give them a lead. And if that happens, and you mentioned those 51 sacks, those interception numbers, like, breaking those is a lot more likely. If this offense can consistently give them the lead, that helps a lot. I mean, they have just the pieces everywhere they need on their front. They're going to be looking at running a little bit of a different defense this year, but it's not exactly different. They do it most of the time anyways. But, I mean, 2 down linemen, so that's going to bring Mike Purcell off, who's the weakest pass rusher on the interior. He's only going to be there for run defense in obvious running situations. You're going to be going with more defensive backs. You're going to be going with more versatility. That's what the Broncos, that's what they really addressed with in this offseason, was adding the versatility to their defense. So, yeah, I mean, it's entirely likely that the Broncos can sit there and have one of the best years as a team when it comes to getting turnovers and interceptions under Vic Fangio that he's ever had.
Yeah, it was actually kind of wild as well, because when you look at the interception numbers, I got to pull it back up here. Give me just a second, guys, because I think it was like 8 total seasons that Vic Fangio defense is actually were in the top 10 in interceptions. Yes, 8 total seasons, and then for the rest of his tenure as a defensive coordinator and as a head coach, every other season was in the 20s, other than 1. in the 20s in terms of interceptions. They had, what was it, the 2012 San Francisco 49ers had, they were 16th in interceptions. Every year after that, or every season other than those top nine, they were in the 20s or lower. So it's really kind of strange. And now that's a blanket statement. And I want to be clear. There's definitely a lot more context to that. What are the players like? What are the injury situations like? Obviously the Broncos last year, but everyone says that this defense, that Vic Fangio is a great guy as far as creating turnovers. And that's just simply not the case. So maybe we need to kind of temper our expectations just a little bit and understand what Vic Fangio likes to do. It seems like more often than not, his defenses, they give up a lot of yards, but they're always really low in point totals. Like they are always in the top 15, top 10 as far as points allowed. Because, again, they let teams get a lot of yards. They try to take the football away. But when it gets down into the red zone, they clamp down, especially in the secondary. And as Eric alluded to earlier in the show, they were one of the best defenses in the NFL. As I think they were actually the number one red zone defense in the NFL over the last two seasons. So it may not be the forte of the defense to take the football away and create other opportunities for the offense, but they're not letting teams score on them. And that's why the Vic Fangio has this mindset. Well, you know what? If we're only allowing 17, 20 points a game, we don't need to have a great offense. We can still rely on our defense. And maybe that might be the wrong mentality here, because with the bad offense, you're putting your good defense in bad situations. So there's some give and take here. The Broncos offense definitely needs to be better. Vic Fangio, and now he's got some players and some horses, some versatility that he can go out and start taking these footballs away. This year might be one of the best defenses that Vic Fangio's ever had across the board. I mean, in the running game, against the pass, taking the football away. I mean, there's a lot to like with this defense.
Yeah, I mean, the best term for Vic Fangio's defense is it's one that'll bend. It'll give up a lot of yards, but it won't break. It's not allowing teams into the red zone. I mean, that stat I gave earlier, only 47.5% of drives that ended in the red zone ended in a touchdown. That's the best in the NFL last year. That's a great stat to have. I mean, it's the ultimate bend but don't break stat.
Yeah, it really is. Got a quick super chat here. Thanks, John. From Richard Summers. I remember Richard coming in here, and he asked us a couple of weeks ago if we could help him out in trying to find some film resources for him to start studying some tape. And he says, you both have gotten me into dabble in looking at film and pointed me to the correct resources. Thank you for educating me. And Richard, that means a lot, man. It really does for you to come back to us and give us a, you know, super chat again and let us know that we've helped you in a way that's going to help you as an analyst, as a fan, in any way, shape, or form. We really appreciate you, man. And I remember that conversation. It was a fun talk about trying to find film and how hard it is to find film, especially of college players. So thank you again for joining us. I think we got another one in here down towards the bottom. John, you want to grab that really fast? Because I'm way up here in the chat. Chase jumping in here with a $5 super. I keep hearing about Ojemudia at safety. Just curious on your thoughts. Eric, what do you think about moving Michael Ojemudia over to safety?
I mean, I'm not exactly for it, but I mean, he can kind of follow that model that Kareem Jackson had. I mean, when you look at what Kareem Jackson was when he first came into the NFL, Michael Ojemudia is not all that different from him, really, with the tackling aspects, the way he looks for the ball. It's all very similar to it. So I could see it happening. I just don't think it's this year. I think it's been pretty well shot down, although don't quote me on that. I'm not entirely sure. But, yeah, I don't think it'll happen this year. I think that there's enough there that they want us to try and continue to develop Ojemudia, especially with Callahan being an unrestricted free agent after this year, especially with Kyle Fuller being an unrestricted free agent after this year, especially and even with Ronald Darby and his injury history. I think they want to continue to give Ojemudia a chance to develop at corner before moving him.
I don't disagree with you on that, but I think that there's another thing that we need to think about here, because Michael Ojemudia is a former third-round pick, and that's a guy that you want to see on the field as much as you possibly can. The best way to develop is trial by fire. Get out there and actually go do it. I mean, John Elway's very famously said that, especially about the quarterback position. Get him out there early, let him go learn, and let him go see, take his lumps. He's going to have some bumps and bruises along the way. It's not going to be exactly the smoothest of rides, but especially as a third-round pick. But, I mean, as a third-round pick, you want to have that guy contributing in a way, you know, that he's going to be out there at least, you know, 35, 45, 50% of the time, something like that, you know. But the Broncos did already invest heavily in the cornerback position, obviously with Kyle Fuller, with Ronald Darby. They went and got Pat Surtain. That might be the next role for him, is kind of a star safety role where he's playing some safety, playing some slot, maybe move him out of the boundary. Do you think that might be a possibility for him this year?
I think, obviously I think we'll see Ojemudia out there on the field. I don't think it'll be a whole lot. I think that the Broncos, I mean, if they're using him, it's because injuries happened. Mm-hmm. It's because they're in a bad situation. Or they're going a lot bigger with more size out on the field and bringing Bryce Callahan off. I mean, there's a lot of situations where we will see him out there on the field. I just don't think it'll be a whole lot this year. Because last year, I think he was better than a lot of fans think he was, but he showed some major inconsistencies with his technique, and mm-hmm. they just want to get that down.
And I agree with you on that, especially in his tackling technique. That week two game against the Pittsburgh Steelers where they were up in Pittsburgh, he had a terrible game. He got burned deep on that Chase Claypool 84-yard touchdown, which is definitely not about Michael Ojemudia. He's not a guy that gets beat deep very often. But the tackling issues that he had, he missed a handful of tackles, including there was one that it was a quick out to Juju Smith-Schuster, if I remember correctly, where he went for the big hit and didn't really wrap up and bring his arms with him and didn't take Juju Smith-Schuster down to the ground. And Juju, when he has the ball in his hands after the catch, he's one of the hardest guys to tackle. Like, you got to wrap up and you got to bring the wood, bring your lunch and actually smack the guy and get him down to the ground. Well, Juju ended up, it was like a 3rd and 7 or a 3rd and 8 just outside of the red zone. Juju turned that into like a 20-yard gain and put the Pittsburgh Steelers in the red zone. That was actually the drive after Drew Lock got hurt, right very early in the beginning of the game. And then I think it was James Conner scored a rushing touchdown just a couple plays later. But he had another couple of missed tackles there. It looked flat-footed in coverage at times. The Atlanta Falcons game where he got absolutely torched by Julio Jones, there's a lot that he has to really work on with that. But, again, third-round pick, you want him to try to develop. And this is the year, you know, year two, especially at cornerback, because it's one of the most difficult positions to transition to coming out of college, and especially in this Vic Fangio defense. Like, there's a lot to like with Michael Ojemudia well, because he is a physical player. He likes to get his hands on guys. He doesn't get beat deep very often. He has good smooth hips. If you let him play off the ball and let him click and close, he can drive on the football. There's a lot to really like with him. I think his best role is probably on the boundary. It's just, where do you play him right now with Ronald Darby and Pat Surtain, who can play on the boundary, with Kyle Fuller, who does his best work on the boundary? I mean, they're four cornerbacks deep even before you get to Michael Ojemudia, and they also drafted Kerry Vincent as well, who's going to take some time in the slot from the sound of it. So it's hard for me. So you got to kind of get creative with Michael Ojemudia, in my opinion, and try to figure out a way that you can get him on the field. And I think that maybe a slight transition to safety this year is probably the best way to do that, other than just getting him out there on special teams.
Yeah, and I just want to address this since it's going on in the chat about Aaron Rodgers and everything. Yes, Green Bay is saying that they don't want to trade him. Doesn't mean they won't. Teams say that all the time. I mean, think back, I know the situation's a little bit different here, but Tim Tebow was the Broncos quarterback. Then Peyton Manning became available. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with it. We will learn a lot more if Aaron Rodgers shows up to mandatory camp on next week, if he's going to be where the Packers stand after that. Denver's interested, that we know, but it's not going to sit there. It's not a situation of, oh, Green Bay's saying that it's not going to happen, so it means it's not going to happen. Teams do that all the time. All the time. This player is not going to be available, and then moments later, that player is traded. Atlanta, for a good portion of this offseason, was saying Julio Jones isn't available. Julio Jones is probably going to be traded. It's how it happens. It's the way the NFL works. No team is going to come out and say, oh, yeah, this player is readily available, because then you're not going to get as much for him in return. Before Denver traded Demaryius Thomas, they came out and they released multiple statements that Demaryius Thomas is not going to be traded. Yep. They don't just come out and say, we're going to trade this player. That's not how it works.
Well, no, I mean, you got to try to save face in some kind of aspect. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has been playing for the Green Bay Packers for 16 years. He started 14 straight seasons. I mean, he's had some injury bumps and bruises along the way, broken collarbones and stuff like that, but which is unfortunate. I mean, but it's football. It's 100% injury rate. You're going to get hurt playing football. But for you know, Brian Gutekunst to say, well, yeah, we're going to trade Aaron Rodgers, all you've done is you've lessened the trade value that you're going to get for him. You're not going to get very much back, because – Unless it's just a crazy bidding war, but everyone knows you're going to trade him anyways. You're going to trade him to whoever you want to. It doesn't matter exactly who that's going to be. Like, you might, instead of getting 3 first round picks, you might only get 2 first and 2 seconds, because everyone's going to be offering that. So you've lessened that trade value for him by saying that you want to trade him. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any kind of sense at all.
And we actually had a really good comment here going back to Fangio's defense after that slight interlude there. Mo says, since Fangio's D gives up yards but not touchdowns, I wonder if it would be a benefit to play the non-starters until teams get in the red zone and then sub in the starters. Might limit injuries. The issue with that, though, is the non-starters are not starters for a reason.
Yep.
They're more likely to make mistakes. They're more likely to give up big plays outside of the red zone. and lead to touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to sit there and not start your starters because you want to keep them from getting hurt. I mean, I get where you're coming from completely. I completely understand. You want to protect them. You want to keep them from getting hurt. I get that completely. But the issue is that they're not starters for a reason. You don't want them out there being a starter, so to speak, because of the potential mistakes that they're going to make.
Yeah, I mean, and there was—I heard a crazy statistic the other day listening to the Fan. I can't remember exactly what the context was, but I do know what the gist of it was. The Kansas City Chiefs lead the NFL over the last, I think it was two seasons, in touchdowns on first or second down of more than 20 yards. Explosive plays. If you're going to have your backups out there that aren't going to hold their responsibilities or maybe not athletically gifted enough or what for whatever the reason, if they're not a starter, they're not on the field for a reason, and if you're going to put them out there against teams like the Kansas City Chiefs or like Darren Waller and the Oakland Raiders or the Las Vegas Raiders, excuse me, I'm going to do that forever, by the way. But anyways, like Henry Ruggs, and now you've got Josh Palmer in Los Angeles with the Chargers, and Keenan Allen, and all those guys. There's a lot of high quality receiving weapons in this AFC West. If you're going to put your backup, fifth, sixth, seventh string cornerback, or maybe not even that, let's just say third, fourth, fifth cornerback out there, and hold Kyle Fuller and Ronald Darby off onto the sidelines until they get across the 50-yard line, you're making yourself more vulnerable to those big splash plays, those big dynamic, huge touchdown plays. So I see where you're coming from with that. It's just a little bit backwards thinking, maybe big brain yourself out of that. But I respect the opinion. I definitely do. It's definitely a different line of thinking here. Pivoting here, Malcolm Brown jumping in here from up in Homer, Alaska with the $2 super chat. Happy 100, Malcolm. As always, man, you're one of the guys that has joined in with us every single show. You're always here saying hi. You're getting a t-shirt, dude. We're sending you a t-shirt for sure. I was hoping that you were going to be in so we could send you a t-shirt. You're definitely one of the people that's going to get one of those. So thank you, and we appreciate you. We really do, man.
And after a short drive, if you want, I could autograph it.
There you go. There you go. let's see here. Dale Hendricks jumping in here with nothing to say, just showing some love with the $5 super chat. Oh, there we got something to say here from Dale. Hey, Broncos country from Palm Springs, barring injury, we should have depth to stay fresh, which should help in turnovers. Hashtag state of being, hashtag Denver Broncos for life. Let me just say something really quick on this, and I definitely agree with you, Dale. This is a great point. Something that's really going to help with creating more turnovers, it's not necessarily the health in the secondary. It's the health up front. Okay,
yep.
So there's Nick Kendall, our colleague and our good buddy Nick Kendall, likes to say this word synergy a lot. Okay, where everybody kind of helps each other, and pass rush is really the direct correlation to creating turnovers. Yeah, you need to have some health in the secondary and have some guys that can get their hands on the football and take it away and stuff like that. But really, the big root of creating turnovers is that pass rush up front. If you can disrupt the passer, make him make some bad decisions, get rid of the football a little bit quicker than he wants to, that's the way you're really going to create turnovers. But I agree with you.
Yeah, and going back to the chat a little bit about Aaron Rodgers, I see a lot of people talking about what it's going to be discussed and not getting into what it would take or anything. I'm just going to say is nobody has any idea what it's going to take to get Aaron Rodgers because a player of his caliber never becomes available on the trade market. It's all speculation. Feel free to do that. But nobody knows one way or the other for sure or anything like that. And then fun fact, we were talking about pressures earlier and everything, and people are talking about Bradley Chubb right now. Bradley Chubb had 57 total pressures last year, eight sacks.
It's like six.
21 of those pressures and four of those sacks came in two games.
Man, the Jets game is for sure.
Jets game and the Miami Dolphins game.
Mm.
That's great that he showed up in those two games. But, I mean, neither of the competition levels were that great. Before Mekhi Becton left the game, when he came back in or anything, Bradley Chubb was shut down during those ones. It wasn't until the second and third string offensive tackles that he really stepped up. And in the Miami game, I think they were down to their second left tackle, or they had to move the right tackle. I can't remember what the case was maybe. I like Bradley Chubb. I think he's got potential still. But, I mean, this is not a great thing when half your sacks and – not quite half your total pressures come between two games. It just goes to show how often he was shut down in other games. And, I mean, yeah, he dealt with a lot of double teams, but if you want to be a star pass rusher, you got to break through those double teams.
Yeah, and that's something that it really did hinder his progression. He's coming off of that torn ACL, and I get that. I I will never give. That's a reason. If you're injured and you're coming back from it, that's not an excuse. That's a reason. And it took him.
And Chase Wolner actually mentioned it. Can it be argued that he was troubled with rusty from injury? Sure, it can be argued that. But his best game, 11 total pressures and 3 sacks, came week 4 against the New York Jets.
Yep. And they were playing.
That's a big sign right there that, hey, yeah, he's still probably rusty after that. But when you have only 2 games, and I think he only had like 4 games total, over 5 total pressures in a game, something like that, I can actually look it up real quick. Like, he just was not consistently there as a pass rusher. And that's what they needed from him last year. Malik Reed, I mean, granted, he wasn't that reliable of one. But, only 3 total games where he had only over 5 pressures. He had 6 pressures against Carolina. That was the only other one above 5. Yeah. Like, it's just not consistent enough. Hopefully he takes a step forward this year. I think he will. I think we'll see a lot better Chubb this year if he's with the Broncos. I mean, I know there's a lot of speculation that he would be part of the Aaron Rodgers trade if it happens, not saying it will, that he'll take a big step forward because the Broncos should be better on the interior defensive line, being able to help him out there, and Von Miller is back, provided Von Miller is able to stay healthy. Those 2 big benefits, I think those are the bigger areas to focus on as to why he was inconsistent last year rather than the injury.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I do want to go back to that Malik Reed statement you had there where he wasn't that great. And that's a big thing where Bradley Chubb's starting to play with the doubles and triple teams. And we see that with Von Miller a lot. I mean, going back to even before they had Bradley Chubb, where he didn't really have help. He's a true Batman, okay? But as a 5th overall pick, you have to be a Batman too. Like everyone said, generational pass rusher. This guy's going to be just legit. And he was his rookie season. He had 12 sacks or something like that. Was really chasing down the rookie sack record there for a couple of games, and I thought he was actually going to get there. Unfortunately, he didn't, but I digress. But then he comes back his second season, plays 4 games, and he was probably the best Broncos pass rusher on the field, especially in the running game. He was great in the running game. And then he had that he tore his ACL week 4 against the Jags, and he was out, you know, the rest of the season. That this last season, you lose your Batman. You lose your true Batman on the other side, and now they don't have you're rotating Jeremiah Atauchu, who was playing with injury all last season and wasn't effective, and then Malik Reed, who was not effective in the running game and wasn't a guy that could really beat one-on-ones. He got a lot of cleanup sacks on the other side because Bradley Chubb was being able to take on those double teams, and still, it may not have been great pressure, but he was still generally around the football and stuff like that, so we got to see that next step for him. We really do. I think he's going to take it. I'm with you, Eric. I think he's going to get a little bit stronger with his legs this year. Not going to be quite so worried about re-injuring that knee again, getting back to the right psychological state of mind after an injury. That's a huge deal, by the way, guys. Psychologically coming back from injury is a major deal, especially in football. But to see him come back, have that full off season, come back with his Batman and be the Batman 2 and not necessarily a Robin, which is what he kind of was last year. He was just a Robin, and then there was Catwoman, I guess, on the other side of that coming back around. Like, no offense to Malik Reed by any stretch of the imagination, but you've got to have that Batman. And Bradley Chubb, he had to play like a Batman last year, and he just couldn't do it, which is unfortunate. I love Bradley Chubb, and I think he's going to be a superstar in this league. If he stays healthy and continues to develop, he's going to be great, but he just has to be able to get back to that.
Well, I mean, we can still go Batman and Robin because there's like 5 billion different Robins because they always die.
That's very true.
And I want to grab this super chat real quick before we move on from Chris Hernandez. Thank you, Chris, for your super chat, man. We appreciate you. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for the happy 100. I mean, super happy that we're here. Super happy we made it. But before we get out of here, Lance had this idea about a little bit more of a personal kind of thing. And and talking about our 5 favorite moments of our 100 episodes, or 5 favorite episodes, or whatever it is, and I'm going to kick it off. And actually, one of my favorite moments was the first time we went live.
Yeah,
the amount of love that we got from everybody in the community and everything like that was amazing to me. I mean, it's. For a lot of you who don't know this, I've been doing stuff like this, working for MHH for 6 or 7 years now, other sites as well thrown in there, and the money wasn't always there. That's the best way to put it. And we were able to come in, and our very first episode made more from you guys willing to donate to us than I had made previously, more than I made ever in a month previously doing this. And that was just so mind-boggling to me. And it just really speaks to how awesome you guys are, everyone in the community, how awesome you guys are for joining us. A lot of you every single night. I mean, like every night you guys are joining here, and you guys are awesome, and we appreciate you. And that first episode, like nothing can ever bring back that feel, and hitting live, going live, and just Lance and I weren't ready for it, and you guys still hopefully enjoyed it. I mean, it was a blast for us, but we definitely weren't ready for it.
That first live episode, we were with Chad, and I remember it was late January of last year, and we were just getting into the draft stuff and everything like that, and I wasn't sure. So the way that actually worked out was Eric sent me a text message. He's like, hey, do you think that you can come and join me and Chad for a podcast really fast? I was like, yeah, I think I could do that. Come hang out for a little bit. And I got there, and Chad's like, well, we're going live. You guys are going to be the first other show outside of the Huddle Up show that's going to be on the live stream. And I wasn't ready. I was like, I'm not sure I want to go about and do this, but you guys came out in full effect, and just, as Eric said, you just blew us away. And it was amazing to be able to do that. And now look at where we're at. We've been doing this. So shortly after we went live, we went to two episodes a week, Friday and Saturday, and you guys came out in full force every single time that we came out. You guys are still coming out in full force and joining us, and you guys don't understand how much we appreciate that. Now, for me, honestly, I think it was like episode 3, and it was right after the Chicago Bears game of the 2019 season, where Garrett Bowles had one of the absolute worst games that he's had as a pro, and probably the worst game he has had in his entire life. And Eric and I decided that we were going to do a deep dive breakdown and essentially a film analysis on Garrett Bowles, and say, this is the thing that he's doing wrong. This is where his technique is bad. This is why these things are happening. This is why he's getting these holding penalties. And to be able to sit down, and this was a recorded show. And Eric, I don't know if you remember this, but I went off on my little scouting report on him, and we stopped for a second. And you said, that was freaking awesome. Like, that was really good job, Lance. You did a really good job there. And then we went back into it. Like, that to me was that first moment. We've been two episodes into it. That was that first moment that I knew that I could hang with you and be a guide to be able to create good content and stuff like that, to where you like respected my opinion on that. So that's a big moment to me.
Well, I just got to say, man, that had to have been a dream, because me compliment you for anything. But no, I mean, James, actually, he had my next favorite moment first. I want to grab Sharon's super chat here with $3. Congratulations on show number 100. And
thank you,
Sharon. Appreciate that. I mean, again, it's mind boggling. We made it here. I mean, I think the trickle down theory is, I think I only made it like 20 something before personal stuff came up. But yeah, James actually has it. I remember this episode. I was so red in the face of defending Garrett Bowles because of the development he showed after that Chicago Bears game. After the bye week, the play we saw of Garrett Bowles in 2019 was so good, and a lot of people just didn't care. I mean, they had that, they're still living in fear of the holding penalties, all this stuff like that. They didn't want to see the development of it, and there was a lot of things for that happened for that, and some of it got me in trouble, but I was red in the face defending him. I remember that. I was heated. I mean, the chat was heated. Everything was going on. People were yelling in chat, it seemed like. But man, that it was a blast. Like, one of my favorite things is that I with my personality and everything, with how I am, when I get like that, I come off as very mean, and I totally understand that, and I try not to. But it's the passion that I have for doing this, for being able to watch offensive linemen, one of my favorite positions to watch and scout. And just being able to do what I do and talk about it and everything, just my passion was able to leak out, which helped make me so heated. So I absolutely love that and love that episode. And I mean, it happened over multiple episodes, but there was one episode in particular. And it was a good time.
We were doing a 53-man roster projection on that video, and we actually got in a little bit of hot water after that one.
I didn't think that. No, that wasn't the one that we made.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, no, that was later towards the end of the season where I remember that.
It was a little over – it was about a year ago.
Yep, it was. Because everyone – it was – when was that? Was that right before I can't remember exactly when that was.
Right before the draft or right after?
Pretty much right before the draft, because everyone was saying that the Broncos needed to go and draft a left tackle because Garrett Bowles was absolutely trash. I remember that.
And we're like, no. That's what you're thinking of, that 53-man roster where we went like 2 hours, two and a half hours, however long it was. That's my favorite episode in general. My favorite episode. We got in so much trouble for going well over an hour.
We did.
After that, we got a long talking to about it, about how that's not okay. But, I mean, we completely understand. We knew that we kind of figured we'd get into a little trouble for it. But we wanted to go in-depth on our roster breakdown, on our 53-man roster prediction. And, it was a good time. And, sometimes the best things in life get you in trouble.
Well, honestly, that was one of the best deep dives that we had done. We went through the 90-man roster and did a 53-man breakdown on who we think is, and we used a little bit of the stuff that you have with some people that you talk to. I was talking to some people as well, you know, and we're collaborating with a little bit of information and stuff like that, you know, the things that we're seeing on Twitter, and it's like trying to create this roster. 2 hours, and the chat was with us the whole time, and you guys were phenomenal. I mean, we got into arguments with the chat, we got into arguments with each other, we got into arguments with everyone, and it was a great just passion building moment, and it made me, you know, that's another one of those things that makes you realize that these guys they're passionate about it, just about their opinions, and they want their opinions out there as well, you know. And and not to bring up bad blood or anything, we got into a big argument with one of our Super Chat superstars, and it was not good. Still, that show though, that show was amazing. Probably my most favorite episode, though, was the very first episode that we had Luke Polglaze, our good friend Luke Polglaze, on the show. And I got blown away by how little I know about football. And I think I know a lot, guys. I really do. You guys come and check me out every single week. I think I know a lot about football. When Luke came on and he started talking, we were talking wide receivers and running backs at the NFL Combine, and he watched, you know, a handful of wide receivers, a handful of running backs, and we started talking about, like, Denzel Mims, who else was it? Jerry Jeudy. We had Justin Jefferson, and he starts talking about how these route concepts are breaking down, the way that these guys are using their feet, using their head fakes, and literally breaking down how these wide receivers play the game. And I was completely blown away at how little I knew about the game. And then we've had him back on multiple times, and he's asked me questions like, how do you see this? Again, just to show that I think I know a lot, and maybe I do know a little bit more than I think I do, but to be able to have a coach, this guy's a college coach at Kenyon College, and to have him asking my opinion on what do you think about this coverage, what do you think this player is doing here, and having an open conversation with him, to be able to do that consistently, man, it's just great.
And we got a couple super chats before we pick up on this discussion, if we have some time. Malcolm Brown with the $5 donation says, which Broncos have the most potential to be NFL coaches? Now, this is difficult because not all players want to be coaches. Mm-hmm. But I think Shelby Harris has a good – I think he's got the right mentality. I think he's got the technique down that he needs to. I think he could be a really good coach. I think Justin Simmons could be a really good coach. And Kareem Jackson as well. But the one that's probably be the most – maybe the most surprising is Jerry Jeudy. With his ability, with his route running, if he can learn how to teach other people that – like, he would be a phenomenal coach. It's just sometimes you got to learn how to teach. That can be the hardest thing for a lot of players. But if he can figure that out, he could be a phenomenal coach.
Yeah. Like, I never thought about Jerry Jeudy. The first one that went to my mind was Justin Simmons, obviously. Another one, a veteran player that's played in the league for over a decade now, Kareem Jackson. I think that he has the leadership mentality the voice and the jawn that you want out of a coach. At least for me, I want that kind of vocal presence to be coaching me, to like get in my face a little bit and show me the things I'm doing wrong. And essentially just chew my ass every now and again. I'd love to have that. Quite honestly, another one that I think would be cut out for a really good coaching role is Dalton Risner. I think that he has the mentality to be able to go out, and he's got some technique issues that he needs to work through, but he has that personality, that relatable personality where you can talk to him and have a conversation with him. And I think that that's going to be another big aspect to that. I mean, yeah, you want to have those chew-your-ass guys, but you also want to have the guy. I think Mike Munchak kind of has a little bit of the in-between of Kareem Jackson and Dalton Risner, where he'll chew your ass if you need to, but also at the same time, he'll coddle you and he'll really break it down and be your friend and then show you what you need to do wrong or show you what you are doing wrong and how you need to correct it and make it right and actually become a better player. I think Dalton Risner has that right mentality. So to me, that's probably the one to watch out for.
I think another one would be Graham Glasgow, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But moving on, we've still got a couple other super chats here. Chase Wallner with a $5 with a thumbs up. We appreciate that, Chase. You'll definitely be one of the guys who gets a shirt from us. Dave Glassman with $1.99. We appreciate that. We appreciate all of you guys who come up liking it, sharing the show, all that stuff like that. We appreciate all of you. And Michaela Parker comes in with a $5 donation with actually a really good question. I heard it's hard drafting offensive line because it takes a long time to develop, and by then they will get paid if they are any good. Thoughts? It really depends. Sometimes offensive linemen come in right away and they just get it. Mekhi Becton, he came in right away. Well, there were issues. He was getting it. I mean, he was the second best rookie offensive tackle last year and probably a top 10 offensive tackle overall last year, if not top 15. And then Tristan Wirfs got it right away. Garrett Bowles, as we know, it took a lot of time. Experience does matter at offensive tackle. And so does the consistency with the coaching and everything like that. And being in the right scheme, that's probably the biggest one. So in my opinion, the bigger issue with drafting offensive linemen is that a lot of teams just kind of try to fit college teams, fit square pegs into round holes, just kind of block to like clog up the thing a little bit just because they got this guy so talented they want to get him out here. So it muddies up the projection of what scheme fit he actually works best in. Guys playing zone that just aren't fit in a zone, guys playing power that just are better off in a zone, things like that. And I think that's the bigger issue than how long it actually takes for them to develop. But the issue with development is it's just such a huge jump from the caliber of players they're going against.
Well, and I think a big part of this is going back to Garrett Bowles. It's very well documented. He has severe learning disabilities. And for him to understand that and to know that he needed to go and get that help, that's a big part of that. But as you kind of said, square pegs and round holes. I think a lot of what goes into offensive line play is not necessarily what they're offensive linemen are probably the smartest players on the football field other than quarterbacks. Like, you get a good quarterback, obviously, he's going to know every single role. But offensive linemen, like, they have to know a lot about the offense, a lot of how to, you know, base their pass sets and stuff like that. I think a big issue, and this might be something that is just my own personal bias here, is these teams are falling in love with tools. They see these athletic guys that kind of move around really well. They have good length and stuff like that, but they don't necessarily understand the game quite right. They're winning at that level, down at the college level, with their athleticism and with the tools that they have, and not necessarily with the mental game. And then that going into that next level, this is something that you see with college players all the time. The mental aspect and how hard it is to understand the game and the speed of the game and all of the nuances that go into playing NFL football, they don't understand that. So it takes a long time for offensive linemen to develop because they're now refining those tools, building, it's three things, refining your tools and make them the best tools that you could possibly have. Build strength because they don't come into the NFL strong enough nearly often enough. Tristan Wirfs is an outlier for the most part. I mean, Laremy Tunsil is probably, there's, you know, two or three guys maybe every other year that you have that are actually pro ready and come in and play at a high level every year. Like Ryan Clady is an odd example of that. Ronnie Stanley as well with the Baltimore Ravens. Like, those guys, they're not strong enough. They can't hang with some of these veteran defensive linemen because they haven't been in that strength and conditioning system. But then the third and the biggest aspect of that is understanding the mental processing that it takes with you and understanding how your sets work, how to use your functional strength, how to maintain your balance, and understanding what you're looking at, the twists and stunts and stuff like that. It's a very difficult transition to come from the college game to the pro game because everyone's just relying on athleticism at the college level. They don't have to understand the strength and physicality and then the mental aspect of that as well.
And Malcolm Brown said, is there a link to the first episode? Malcolm, the only place I've been able to find it is on Spreaker. That's the only place I've been able to. You have to scroll through a little bit to the first one. And if you wanted to, you even have all the old Trickle Down Theories episodes on there. And I realized that looking back, I went and found it for you. I made it to 30 Trickle Down Theory episodes.
No, I listened to probably 10 or 12 of those Trickle Down Theories. They were actually one of my favorite shows. Nick and Carl were just getting started back then, too. It was about that same time that you were doing Trickle Down Theories that Nick and Carl were going. And quite honestly, I like Nick and Carl. Don't get me wrong. At first, they didn't rub me the right way. I didn't necessarily like the stuff they were putting out. He does. He really does. He acts funny, too. Can you not find that on YouTube? I thought you did. Maybe search DVDD pod episode one or number one or something like that.
John was looking for it and he couldn't find it. Only okay. place I was able to find it was on Spreaker. So
okay. Yeah, Spreaker.com. Search Dove Valley Deep Divers. You should be able to find it there. Let's see here. Do we have anything else as far as Super Chats, or are we going to pretty much wrap it up here? I think we got it.
Oh, and James came in with another one. Brett Rypien for an NFL coach. Definitely.
Yeah, I saw that earlier. I wanted to grab that, and then the comment section jumped on me here. Let's see here. They're talking about Pat Surtain. James coming back in there with the Rypien comment, and that's absolutely true. Like he could be on that Kellen Moore path. Like quite honestly, he could be on that Kellen Moore path to be a quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, designing an offensive scheme and working through that. So I could definitely see that one. That's a good pull, James. And it's good to see you back in the chat and back on the show, man. It's been a minute since we've seen you live. Which is wild, because I know that this is your favorite show. But let's see. I think that's pretty much it, guys. So first things first, shout out to all of our Super Chat superstars for joining us. Malcolm Brown, Chase Wellner, Michaela Parker. Guys, if you guys are on Twitter, make sure you guys link up with me at SandersonMHH. Shoot me a DM. If not, I know the milehighhuddle@gmail.com. That's Chad's email account. Email him and let him know that you three are the winners of the t-shirts from tonight. We thank you guys all for joining us. We really, really do. Episode 100, it's been a blast the last almost 2 years to be able to do this. We thank you all for joining us again on episode 100 of the Dove Valley Deep Divers podcast. We're going to wrap it up here. John, I'm going to take the sticks for just a minute, run through the matters of business here. You guys can find me again at SandersonMHH on Twitter, for Eric at Eric Trickle, for John at Moana Beast at John Kaymhh on Twitter as well. Thank you for all the work that you've done over the last 7-8 months or something like that with us on the show. John's been a fabulous follower, fabulous friend to us. We enjoy talking with him behind the scenes as well. So shout out to you, John, for everything you do.
Real quick with John, I remember when on Mile High Huddle, when he first started commenting, I would always see his comments. I'm like, oh no, I don't want to deal with this. But getting to talk to John and getting to know him a little bit, yep. Awesome dude. And I'm glad that you were brought on, and I'm glad that we get to see you and chat with you every week, and for me, twice a week on Saturday mornings as well.
Yeah, I'm jealous of you for that. I really am. But anyways, guys, back at it here. While you guys are at following on Twitter and whatnot, follow at @DVDD_pod. That's the podcast account. Easiest way to keep up with what's going on with us. Also, let's see. Where did it go? It's not in the right place. Maybe not. Never mind. At Mile High Huddle, guys. That's the easiest way. At Mile High Huddle, that's the mother account. That's where you guys are going to get breaking news and analysis, opinion articles, film breakdowns from all of your guys' favorite Mile High Huddle personalities, including myself and Eric, but also Nick and Carl, Luke Patterson as well, Chad, Zach, the whole gang at milehighhuddle.com. That's where you're going to find all of your Denver Broncos news, so make sure you guys check that out. Follow at Mile High Huddle on Twitter as well. Let's see here. Facebook users, make sure you guys go to facebook.com/milehighhuddle and click the become a supporter button. $5 a month, you guys get premium access, including the Trickle Zone and Kelberman's Corner. Now, Eric, are you doing Trickle Zone this week?
Yes.
Now, what do you got?
As far as I know, it's until further notice, it'll be every Saturday again. I had my vacation. Unfortunately, this was such a bummer. We went on vacation. We went up to the big city in Anchorage. Over the weekend, and Sunday we were at the zoo and my daughter got sick. So that kind of was a bummer, but she's feeling good now. But yeah, every Saturday, and I can't remember what the topic is. I think we're talking about the 2020 draft class and expectations for them, I believe, is what I have on the docket, but I'm not entirely sure.
Well, the easiest way to figure that out, guys, facebook.com/milehighhuddle. Click that blue become a supporter button and check out Eric tomorrow, so Saturday, at noon Mountain Time. So 2 p.m. Eastern, noon Mountain Time for Eric. That's 10 o'clock in the morning, by the way. Guys, if you guys are financially able to do so, head on over to huddleuppod.com. Like I said, we've got the new Dove Valley Deep Divers t-shirt. It's a white t-shirt with the blue and orange logo, hashtag state of being on with orange letters on the backside. We're giving three of those away to Malcolm Brown. We've got Chase Wellner and Michaela Parker going to be the recipients of those. But that's where you guys can get that. You guys can get our orange Dove Valley Deep Divers t-shirt. We've got hats. There's something for every podcast. There's something for just my MileHighHuddle.com, the state of being hoodie. There's a coffee cup. There's a face mask. There's a onesie for your baby if that's what you're fancy. Anything for the guys, for the gals, anything you guys want. HuddleUpPod.com is a great way to support the show. And if, guys, you are not financially able to do so, or not just not willing to do so, I mean, it's not necessarily everybody's, you know, flavor of style and stuff like that to support podcasts or whatever. The easiest things you guys should all be doing by now is wherever you guys are watching this episode, subscribe. Subscribe to Mile High Huddle, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you guys get your podcast content. Subscribe to Mile High Huddle. Like every video you guys see, especially on YouTube and Facebook. That's the greatest way to help us. It helps with the algorithm, gets us in front of a lot more Broncos fans, and it helps us grow. It really does. But the easiest way, the most organic way to help us grow is to share it. If you guys love the content that we're putting out here, it's a litmus test. If you love it, share it. Get it in front of as many of your friends and family as you possibly can, because that itself is the easiest, most organic way to help this show grow and get in front of as many Broncos fans as humanly possible, because without you guys, without you, the fans that joined us tonight and join us every single week, we could not do what we do best, which is cover your Denver Broncos. Now, episode 100, we're going to wrap it up right here. Eric, before we get out of here, though, any last words, buddy?
Yeah, I think we should try to convince Chad after, like, downtime, like maybe this offseason or something like that, to do, like, a little award show, because I know I would definitely have Biggest Nosed Award 1.
Oh, man. The most Jabba the Hutt references is definitely going to go to you. most Pokemon references probably going to go to us. Most hated is going to be definitely to us. I mean,
Most ums.
Yeah, that's definitely me. That is most certainly me. I've worked so hard on that too, guys. I really do apologize. I know I'm terrible at this, but anyways, guys, no, thank you all once again. 100 episodes, and again, without you guys, we couldn't do this. We really couldn't. We love and appreciate all of your guys' support on Twitter, just here in the show, getting on us in the comment section of our articles. Like, seriously, if it's not for you, our lovely following, our great community, the people that we communicate with on a daily basis, we really couldn't do this. It's because of you that we are able to sit here on Fridays at 6 o'clock Mountain Time and bring you this good content. So with that, guys, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's going to do it for us tonight. You guys stay safe and take care. Have a great rest of your weekend. For Eric Trickle, I'm Lance Sanderson. And as always, before we get out of here, go Broncos. Thanks again, guys.